Well, as you know, we started a sermon series Wednesday night with the movie Secretariat, and we'll be seeing two more movies in the coming weeks. And the movie that tells the story of a horse is where we started. Now, go figure that out. How did we start with a horse? And yet, it has so much in it, so much for us to learn about God. He won the Triple Crown in 1973, and he won it in the shortest amount of time and by more lengths than any other horse before him or since. And it is a story about a horse, but it's also about the people who believe in him and about the people who believe in each other and who gather around as colleagues and friends to support not only this horse, but to support each other as they run the much longer race of getting together and reaching the goal set before them. Every human being in this story had obstacles to overcome and many chances to stop in the middle of their own race. However, they kept on going because they believed in something bigger than themselves. Now, the movie begins with a lady named Penny Chinnery Tweedy. Chinnery is her maiden name. Tweedy was her married name, and she was a housewife in Denver. She's the daughter of a man named Chris Chinnery, who was a horse breeder. Well, when her mother dies and her dad is too feeble to be able to take care of the farm anymore, she steps in and attempts to save the horse farm. It was the whole farm was devoted to breeding horses. Well, it turns out that she is her father's daughter. She has horses in her blood. And so at a prearranged meeting, she participates in a coin toss with this other breeder. And the toss determines who gets first choice between two colts that are soon to be born. And although the other breeder wins the toss and gets first choice in choosing whichever colt he wants, she gets the one she wanted, the one that was considered to be second choice. That's mainly because she did her homework. She read about bloodlines and all of those things. But that event started Penny down the path to horse raising and horse racing. Now, her first step was to put together a team to get this horse, who they named Big Red, ready to race. And her ultimate team is made up of a trainer for the colt, a jockey, a groom, and a secretary. Everybody needs a secretary, right? And on the surface, this team looked shaky at best. The trainer was named Lucien Lauren. And he's a burned-out, washed-up French-Canadian trainer who was trying to retire and who had saved clippings of every failure he ever had in racing. So he focused on his failures and kept them in his wallet just in case he had to remind himself every once in a while that he was indeed a failure. Then we had the jockey. Now, the jockey is named Ron Turcotte, and he comes in on the scene because the first jockey that they used was too inexperienced and couldn't ride the horse correctly. So Turcotte comes into the scene on crutches. He had just had a bad fall in a race where he raced a horse so hard that at the end of the race, its heart burst. He was not what you'd call up for jockey of the year at this time. And yet he comes into this kind of shaky team. The groom was named Eddie Sweat, and he had worked for Chris Chinnery for over 13 years. And yet he had gotten crossways with the trainer that they had before Lucien Lauren and almost was about to quit until Mr. Chinnery died. And then the last team member is Elizabeth Hamm, and she didn't know much about horses, but she knew a lot about organizing things, and she knew a lot about the farm, and she was completely 100% supportive and trustworthy in this whole thing. Now, Penny's husband and four children, she had four children there in Denver, they had to learn how to make life work without her on the scene as much as she had been in Denver as this housewife. And it does take a toll on her family as the movie progresses. And then a smaller part in this movie is played by Penny's brother. And his main focus was to sell the farm, sell the horse, and get his share of the inheritance. He wasn't a bad guy. He just thought he was making good business sense in looking at everything this way. Well, throughout the movie, we see Penny as she fights the odds and resists the best advice from the experts who have been in the business much longer than she has. Many times, she's advised to give up, to quit, to sell the farm, to sell the horse, to hire different people, and to come on home to Denver. But throughout that movie, throughout that whole story, which is true, remember, she stands firm. And she refuses to give in, even though maybe at times it did seem tempting. But when she realizes that she can't pay the taxes on the farm, she doesn't have the cash flow that she needs, she comes up with this idea to raise money by selling shares in the horse even before he has proven himself. Because deep down in her gut, she knows he can go the distance. You see, for her, giving up wasn't an option. And she made that plan work, by the way. But during the film, we see clips of her and her dad when she was young. And in one clip, they're walking hand in hand through the stables. And she says, "Do you think we can win?" And he says, "It's not whether they think we can win. It's whether we think we can win. You run your race, Penny." And so as they trained Big Red, they called him Big Red, even though his real name became Secretariat, because the Horse Association liked fancier names than Big Red. And so they made up this other name. Guess who made up the name Secretariat? Just get one guess. The secretary, sure she did. It's a great name. But she did make up that name. But as they trained Big Red, they began to see that his gait was different from other horses. And so they were talking about trying to change his gait so that he could run like a regular horse. But Lucian said, "Don't change his natural gait. Don't force him. He's got fire in him." And then when her brother continued to insist that they sell the farm, all she could say to him was, "Daddy's legacy to me isn't about money. It's about the will to win and to live with it if you can't." And then finally, when someone tells her to go on back to the way things were before she got all mixed up in all this horse business, she says, "This isn't about going back. It's about life being ahead of you, and you run at it because you never know how far you can run unless you run." That makes good sense, doesn't it? Well, this is a movie about pressing on despite the obstacles. And it actually starts with Scripture. And it plays a song about Jesus all throughout the movie. The opening words, the very first words we hear, are those words from Job, the 39th chapter, the passage that Terry just read to us. And the song that plays is called "Oh Happy Day." Y'all know that song? I was going to sing it, but I'm just going to tell you the words because they're awesome. But that song was written in 1967. It was based on a mid-18th century hymn, actually, called "Oh Happy Day That Fixed My Choice." You might have heard it in that form. But the song actually won it became an international hit in 1969. It was number one in several European countries and number four in the United States at that time. I remember hearing that on the radio and thinking, "What kind of song is that?" Because it didn't sound like any songs that were popular at the time. And so maybe you've never really listened to the words, and so I'm not going to sing it to you, but I'm going to give you just the short. I mean, these are the only words in the song, and it's like a 4-minute song. It's just the only words we hear. "Oh happy day, oh happy day, when Jesus washed my sins away. He taught me how to watch, fight, and pray, and live rejoicing every day. Those are great words for us to know. He taught me how to watch, fight, and pray, and live rejoicing every day. Now, today's passage finds us in Paul's letter to the Philippians, which is a letter he wrote from prison as he awaited trial there in Rome. And throughout this letter, the letter to the Philippians, we find a theme of rejoicing and endurance despite hardship. Listen to these verses from chapter 3 again. I press on to possess that perfection for which Christ first possessed me. No, dear brothers and sisters, I've not achieved it. But I focus on this one thing. Forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead, I press on to reach the end of the race and receive the heavenly prize for which God, through Jesus Christ, is calling us. Let all who are spiritually mature agree on these things. But if you disagree at some point, I believe God will make it plain to you. Don't you love Paul? But we must hold on to the progress we have already made. There's no such thing as one step forward and two steps back for Paul. He says, hold on to the progress we have already made. Despite his imprisonment and his persecution, Paul encourages the Philippians to press on. He doesn't focus on his own hardship. He focuses on God's power in his life. He doesn't look back. He doesn't believe that his life is over. And he doesn't feel sorry for himself because he's in prison. You should read the whole book. The whole book of Philippians, that entire letter. It's only four chapters. Go home and read it tonight. It's a great, great letter. He believes that whatever might happen to him, he has no need to be afraid, and he lives rejoicing because he knows that God is in it with him. And despite what other people said to her, Penny Chinnery Tweedy pressed on with her dream. She didn't quit because it looked like she would lose. She didn't give in to the demands of the people who thought they knew more than she did. And she didn't succumb to her fears or to the fears of the people around her. She didn't assemble a team of experts who would take the safest path. She assembled a team of experts who were passionate. Now, Paul was an expert in the law before he knew Jesus, but he became an expert in faith after he met Jesus. Paul was ridiculed and persecuted. He was shipwrecked. He suffered beatings and torture of all kinds because of his fiery preaching and his unwavering faith in Jesus Christ. And you know I have to talk about John Wesley every chance I get. He had the same kind of situation in his life. He was looked down on by fellow clergy colleagues because of his fiery preaching and his unwavering adherence to biblical truth. Neither of those men, not John Wesley, not Paul, were willing to water down the gospel in order to get along with the people who knew better. Both men were tempted to give up, but ultimately they pressed on to reach the end of the race and to receive the heavenly prize for which God, through Jesus Christ, was calling them. Now, I'm living proof that it is a temptation to give up on many things for a variety of reasons. And like Penny said, her father's legacy was about the will to win and to live with it if you don't win. You see, the whole thing is she was willing to lose as much as she was willing to fight to win. When the going got rough, and it did, she said this, I'm not giving up. I will not live the rest of my life with regret. We're going to see that horse run, and we're going to live every day rejoicing. Losing doesn't mean that we can't rejoice. At a certain point in this story, she goes back to the man who won the first coin toss. You remember him, and he chose who looked like he would be the best horse. But he ended up choosing the wrong horse. And so she goes to him and asks him to buy a share in Secretariat. And he says, I can't do that. I already look like a fool because I chose the wrong horse. And she said, it isn't foolish to be unlucky. You see, his pride got in the way. And pride is a strong motivator for limiting our potential. But he did take a chance, and he pushed his pride aside, and both he and Penny won in the end. Now I'm going to show you a few pictures of people who are running their own race right now. There are so many ways for us to run, and some of these are family people because they were on my phone. But the main thing as we run our race is to keep our eyes on Jesus. And to keep walking forward, not going back, but walking forward. Rhett, give us the first one. I don't even know what order they're in. Ah, there's somebody running her own race. Playing an electric guitar that she can't play and singing at the top of her lungs. Let's see the next one. Ah, there's Bill Haley on his birthday in a race car. I was going, oh my gosh, he just had to take that ride. Next one. Oh, those are two little girls in a store, and they are in a fashion boutique doing their own thing. What's the next thing, Rhett? What is that? That's a picture of the labyrinth at Mount Wesley. You see, you can run your race walking reflectively in silence. That's another way to run your race. And the last one, ah, that says Trucker's Chapel. I don't know how well you can see that picture. My kids saw this in a parking lot when they just went on a vacation out west. And anybody who wanted to could just drive up to this 18-wheeler. People in trucks, anybody who wanted to, and just walk up those steps. And there was a man in there praying with them, reading scripture to them, and ready to pronounce the gospel of Jesus Christ to anybody who came across his path. That's another way to run your race. Thank you. I've heard it said that it's easier to tame a wild horse than it is to resurrect a dead one. We all need training. Even Secretariat, the greatest running horse that ever lived, had to be trained. One of the things that Lucian said about him was that he leans back in the gate like he's on the Caribbean having a Mai Tai. He does what he wants to do. He eats too much, and he eats when he feels like it. He needed a trainer because deep down inside, I think he was a little lazy, but he also wanted to run. And that was another thing that Lucian said about him. I've never seen a horse that wants to run as much as this one. So we did have to learn a few things. But when we change someone's natural gait, it's like attempting to change what God has created. So remember to press on and take hold of the heavenly prize that God through Jesus Christ has waiting for you. And here's one last quote from this movie. Before the final race, this is so important, that last race, you know, they'd won those two, and here was the third one standing in front of them. And she goes, who knows if this happened, but it's really lovely. She goes and she stares into that horse's face and she says, I realize something. I've already won. I made it here. I didn't quit. I've run my race. Now you run yours. Well, Secretariat won that last race, that triple crown there at Belmont by 31 lengths. He sired over 600 foals in his lifetime. And when he started, the person who could have chosen him didn't, because they didn't think he would have what it took. Don't give up. Run your race, even if it doesn't look like everyone else's, and don't neglect your training. It's important. And just remember, that God made you to be exactly who you are. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.